see Mitch? I used to be you. My mother used to dress me in white shirts and hush puppies and made me carry a briefcase guaranteeing that a girl would never talk to me. And lately I've been missing these, so I asked Hathaway if I could room with me again, and he said sure, so... Put all your stuff away in the bottom drawer there, shirts, pants, shoes. I had a little trouble with the sports jacket, so I threw it out. I'm Chris Knight.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus review of Real Genius.
When I first brought you into this school, I thought you'd become another Einstein. And you were well on your way. And then?
I got a haircut.
Hosted by Arnie.
He's one of the 10 finest minds in the country.
Someday I hope to be two of them.
Stuart.
Compared to you, most people have the IQ of a carrot. We're different than most people, Mitch. Better.
And Jacob.
My teachers disliked me because I was smarter than they were. The students hated me because I blew the bell curve.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
If you want to leave, go ahead. But you're going to miss the fun.
Listener discretion is advised.
You coming, buddy boy?
Buddy boy.
Let's see how funny you think this is.
Number one is a hard time.
Today we're discussing Real Genius.
Every day we're discussing Real Genius. Now we're spending the whole podcast on it.
Starring Val Kilmer, Gabe Jarrett, Michelle Mayrink, William Atherton, directed by Martha Coolidge. This is Arnie. It goes from God to Jerry to me to the podcast.
And Stuart.
And this is Jacob. Hey, guys, we're podcasters. Why aren't we podcasting?
We are. We are podcasting about Arnie's... I don't know if it's your favorite movie, but it's certainly your favorite movie to reference. Like, Real Genius has come up in the oddest of times. Like, I feel like it is your Rosetta Stone, really. And talking about film history, all roads lead back to this 1985 comedy.
Arnie, take us on the journey. What is your Real Genius story?
You know, it's funny because this is a film that I would say I hold dear. You know, I've watched it so often I can't even count, but I wouldn't say it's my favorite movie. You know, I've never thought of getting a Val tattoo or anything, and how it keeps coming up is somewhat of a mystery even to me, except that maybe I saw this at a formative time where I was learning story structure and saw how it was applied here and saw how many character relations were. I didn't even hear of this movie when it came out.
What?
It came out in a week of science movies. I remember ads for My Science Project, and I remember ads for Weird Science. And both those movies came out the same weekend as Real Genius.
Wow. I will say I went and watched the trailer for this. Not a great trailer. Did not sell me the way Weird Science sold me on that movie.
Not to mention Back to the Future was like the number one movie. It was actually the one that won the weekend, and it had been out for like a month. I agree. There was this trend going on to have these hyperactive comedies. I guess that's what you'd call them, but they definitely have a science fiction or science-y bent to it. I am the only one that saw this in theaters then?
Yeah,
whoa, apparently. You saw this in theaters?
I did. It was not my number one pick for that weekend. That weekend, I was at Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It also opened same weekend.
Oh, great film, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Saw it twice even. But I mentioned my pen pal. We went and saw Fright Night. I had forgotten, but he and I, before school kicked up, sixth grade started, we did make it to this movie. I remember a lot of popcorn. It was the popcorn at the end that made me go, oh yeah, for sure I saw this. I remember enjoying it and never thinking about it again. Never saw it on TV, never rented it, never even came up in my mind until we started doing the show.
Yeah, I know exactly the year I saw this. It was not in theaters. It was in the year 2000. And I'm not doing a Conan O'Brien bit here. But I was living with my best friend. You know, I had my little VHS collection. He had his little VHS collection. And, you know, sometimes you get home from work, you don't want to drive to Blockbuster. You're tired. So I'm like, what movies does he have that I haven't watched? He had Real Genius on VHS tape. I watched it. But in preparation for this show, because he loves this film, Arnie, loves this film. So I texted him like, hey, why do you have this weird obsession with Real Genius? Text that to him. Don't hear from him for like 3 days. And you know what? He's a family man living in New York during the time of Corona, scary times. He's busy. I get it. All of a sudden in my email, I get a link to a Google Word doc where he has written a 1700 word essay on why this movie is so great.
Wow.
Yes, so that was fun. But yeah, my best friend loves this film. That's why I saw it, because he owned it on VHS tape, and I was just bored one day and didn't want to go to Blockbuster and popped it in.
And I saw this. I didn't even choose to see it. I was sick, and my parents were out of town. I was staying with my godparents. And I don't even remember what I had, but I was out of school, and I was just sitting in their basement convalescing. And one day, they knew I was bored. They went to the video store and just picked two movies for me to see. I don't remember what the other one was, but one of them was Real Genius. And I'm like, I've not even heard of this movie, but let me put it in. And I fucking loved it. And then I dubbed it not long after. I made a copy of it so I could watch it again and again. And I became a fan of Val Kilmer, and I started following his career, hoping that I'd see the character of Chris Knight brought back in a different performance, and never did.
So it wasn't like you're a big fan of like Top Secret with Val Kilmer and went to this one. You just happened to watch this and that was it.
Yeah, I'd never heard of anybody in this film. I didn't see Top Secret until probably 3 or 4 years after I saw Real Genius.
I mean, come on, William Atherton had been in Ghostbusters by this point.
Oh, true. William Atherton.
One of my favorite character actors, always an asshole.
Yeah, I'd seen him and I didn't realize it, but I'd seen Michelle Mayrink in Revenge of the Nerds.
That's right. Yep.
And that's what I think we have to realize is Revenge of the Nerds came out in 84, big hit, and then everybody else is trying to fast track nerd projects. Weird Science, I feel like, tried to copy some of the sex stuff from Revenge of the Nerds. My Science Project, I don't know what it was trying. I saw that movie.
I don't remember that one.
Dennis Hopper, right? He shows up. Yeah.
What? As a science nerd?
Dennis Hopper and Fisher Stevens is the geek in that.
Yeah, I think that you've discovered it like most people, Arnie. I feel like this movie probably could have been a big hit, but it was August. And there were so many comedies, as we've already pointed out. Summer Rental, the John Candy movie, also opened the same weekend. Like, just too many comedies to compete. So it just got lost in the shuffle. It made a very modest $12 million. But yes, because this was the advent of VHS, watch it at home, in rental terms, because of cable, because of Blockbuster Video, this did become something of a classic and lived well beyond its theatrical life.
Val Kilmer has taken in recent years to going to conventions and signing, you know, hasn't had that much luck as an actor on screen. He was doing his Mark Twain thing. You know about that, right? He went, did a stage show as Mark Twain.
Yeah.
And he would do conventions. And he came to Chicago and I went to get his autograph. And what did I get? Not Batman. No, why would I get Batman? Tombstone? No, fuck that. Real Genius. So my wife and I are there, and my wife's wearing a I Love Toxic Waste t-shirt.
Nice.
And we give it to him, and it's just so surreal. He's like, Real Genius, that's a silly movie.
Well, from a silly man. You know, it's strange how much it prophesied, really, his whole, you know, I mean, he has a performance art kind of, I want to be irritating in life kind of way about him, right? Like this character that he plays in here, Chris Knight, is kind of what he ends up doing anytime they invite him on a legitimate set. I feel like this sets the tone for all Val Kilmer to follow.
I read his autobiography, I'm Your Huckleberry. I do have a second Val Kilmer autograph. I bought it from his website autographed. So I have that signed also. And he does talk about getting cast in this. And, you know, he just done Top Secret, so he wasn't a star or anything. And he went in trying to be in character as Chris Knight, like just blowing off the director, eating croissants and letting them just spill down his chest. And it got him the job. But then when they were doing script readings and things and he was still an asshole.
Yes.
He actually found out from a friend of his. I just got a call from the studio and they're asking me to audition for Chris Knight in Real Genius.
Yeah. Too much of Val Kilmer is way too much. And I do think that, yeah, when you see the Saint or Island of Dr. Moreau or most of his future movies, this kind of performance didn't go well for him. Like, he tried to hog the spotlight in the same way this character does, and it didn't serve him well. In the end, I feel like he is a good actor, but self-destructed because he wasn't so much interested in acting as he was punking.
How much of a protagonist is he? Like, I wonder if they beefed up his role. Like, oh, that Top Secret was a big hit. We need more Val Kilmer in this, because I don't think he's the main character, really, even though he's on the box, even though he gets first billing.
And even though Val Kilmer was on the poster with Einstein, Gabe Jarrett was nowhere to be seen on the poster. He doesn't sell movies. He was barely in the trailer, too. But yeah, I don't think they beefed it up. But one of the reasons Val almost got fired is because he and the director, Martha Coolidge, did not get along at all. And Martha thought he was trying to hog the spotlight and wasn't letting anybody else be funny.
Martha was probably right, by the way.
Yes. And she had dealt with Nicolas Cage.
Is there a director that does like Val Kilmer? Like, have you ever heard about him on set, like, in it going well?
Joel Schumacher did say he would never work with Val again.
Right.
I heard the stories of him threatening to burn people with cigarettes on Dr. Moreau.
Oh, yeah, he did that. I at least according to some of the extras, he would put cigarettes out on them.
Yeah, so my sympathies are with this director. I'm like, okay. I apparently made Valley Girl, a beloved 80s movie I've never actually seen.
Love it. Yes, one of my favorite.
Oh, okay. See, I've never seen it.
I'd never seen it before. I watched it just before this review. It was okay. I might have liked it a lot more when I was young. To me, it feels like if this is a pastiche on Revenge of the Nerds, that movie really wanted to be Fast Times at Ridgemont High, but didn't quite get so high. I figure it's Fast Times at Ridgemont Middle.
Oh, so much better than Fast Times, in my opinion.
Wow.
For Johnny Are You Queer Boy alone.
Well, no, that's a good song and a funny song. But Jacob, you grew up in the Valley. You may have more of an attachment.
That helps.
Yes, no, that is part of my affection for it, is that it's the Valley, and yeah, Nick Cage is a punk from Hollywood.
I think it was remade recently for the Disney Channel.
It was. It's a musical now. It's still a period piece. It's awful. I haven't seen it, but I just assume it's awful.
But yeah, I mean, a female director who had a couple of hits under her belt coming in. This was a movie she turned down twice. They really wanted to get this made. Apparently, the original script was far more Revenge of the Nerds, and that was not a movie that Coolidge was interested in making. But when they came to her the third time, she's like, I think there might be something here that we could work with. Like, take the bare bones of it, but let's see what we can do with it. And so she took her screenwriters, there's three credited, I don't know which ones did the early stuff and which ones went with her, to Caltech. And they started interviewing all these students at Caltech. And while this is taking place at the fictitious Pacific Tech, it is really Caltech. And a lot of the stories you're going to hear here, a lot of the pranks you see pulled, a lot of the dorm design, the graffiti, even somebody living in the steam tunnels, all were true stories from Caltech. So they completely rewrote it. They started interviewing the military. They interviewed all these people at Caltech. They actually researched space-based laser development. They hired a Caltech student to be a consultant in the film and ended up with this cult film.
And you mentioned the screenwriters, two of them anyway, their collaborators, Neil Israel and Pat Proft.
Police Academy?
Yeah, not only did they have Police Academy under their belt, they also did Bachelor Party and Moving Violations, which I also saw with my pen pal. Remember that one? It was Police Academy in a driving school.
Sounds wonderful.
I like Moving Violations and I like Bachelor Party, I think is really funny. And Police Academy 1, it doesn't really hold up, but
none of them do, Arnie.
You know, that entire franchise is judged by the sequels. The first one really does have some stuff going for it.
Right. Well, anyway, again, I think that is the kind of comedy that they were shooting for. And then Coolidge, yeah, brings in, is realism the right word? She brings in some authenticity by bringing in real students and maybe grounding it in college experience that actually happened. That's pretty cool. I'm surprised you didn't go to this school, Arnie.
You think I'm smart enough to get into Caltech? Thank you. I'm honored.
Yeah, you didn't. Sure. Why not?
You know, I never really applied myself at school. I think might have been part of the problem.
Yes, I do remember these years were not your most productive.
I far more associated myself with Chris Knight than I ever did Mitch Taylor in this. I wanted to be the one who was constantly joking and goofing off and not studying and still gliding by in my classes, which is pretty much how I got through both high school and my undergrad years.
Someday they'll make a movie about that. But Arnie, until then, why don't you give him the plot of Real Genius?
15-year-old genius Mitch Taylor, played by Gabriel Jarrett, is leaving behind his life at home to enter the physics program at Pacific Technical University. He was recruited by Professor Jerry Hathaway, played by William Atherton, so Mitch could work on Hathaway's laser project. That project is led by senior Chris Knight, played by Val Kilmer. Knight was the smartest student at the school, so Mitch is taken aback by Knight's laid-back and juvenile behavior. Rounding out the laser development team is Suckup Kent, played by Robert Prescott, and Kent's lackeys, Carter and Bodie. Kent is jealous of Knight's success and increasingly tries to sabotage his classmate. This extends to torturing Mitch, and Kent's bullying almost gets Mitch to drop out of Pacific Tech, but Chris convinces him to stay. Chris brings Mitch into his group of friends, including Ikigami, known as Ik, and ADHD Jordan, played by Michelle Myrink. And Mitch and Jordan start a relationship, and Mitch meets the strange man who lives in the tunnels under the school, former student Laszlo Hollifeld, played by John Grease. Laszlo was by far the smartest student to ever attend Pac Tech, but he cracked from the pressure. When things seem to have leveled out, Hathaway tells Chris if he doesn't finish the 5-megawatt laser, then the professor is going to flunk him and he won't graduate. Chris is despondent as the task seems impossible, but last-minute inspiration strikes and Chris and Mitch deliver the laser. Their revels are cut short when Laszlo points out their laser has only one purpose, a military application. In secret, Hathaway's been working for the CIA and using his students to deliver them new high-tech weapons. Together, Mitch, Jordan, Chris, Ik, and Laszlo hack the military computers, changing the coordinates of the laser's test fire, and they bring the dean of Pacific Tech and a congressman to witness the laser firing and expose Hathaway's illicit deals. The test shot of the laser hits the new target, which is Hathaway's newly built home, as the students celebrate and credits roll.
And as credits start, I gotta say, I'm laughing right from the get-go. This animated history of warfare set to the jazz singer doing You Took Advantage of Me, it's taken a page from Dr. Strangelove. I actually feel like it feels like the end of Dr. Strangelove with We'll Meet Again and seeing, us Neanderthals go from bow and arrow to the A-bomb.
Yeah, you talked about how this was rewritten and went through all these rewrites. Was this something that came later, this whole anti-military industrial complex storyline? Because, you said it, Stuart, right at the beginning with these credits, that's what they're going for. And again, in that 1,700-word essay my friend sent me, that is what he praises, that like Strangelove, this is one of the great anti-military industrial complex films.
Yeah, I'm glad we recently did Dr. Strangelove because I wouldn't necessarily have seen the parallels, but early posters with this actually have a mushroom cloud behind Val Kilmer. And Val Kilmer's smiling and things. It's not like he's horrified. He's smiling with his little antenna on as a mushroom cloud is behind him, and sometimes he's standing there with Einstein, who of course developed the A-bomb. So it's something that was really driven home by Coolidge, and she made this all up with the CIA and the students, and after this movie came out, she received a lot of letters from people at MIT and at Caltech who are like, yes, I didn't realize it. My work was being commissioned for military use, and I only found out after I graduated. So this is stuff that was really happening, and they didn't know how close to truth they were at the beginning. But I've always felt this opening was weird to me, because the opening song, I just didn't care for the jazz song. I love the soundtrack of this movie. I love all the pop and new wave songs we're going to hear throughout it. So You Took Advantage of Me felt a little weird. And then this opening with the video for the crossbow military weapon and a whole bunch of actors we're never going to see again sitting around a table discussing it from the CIA, it seems like a strange way to introduce a teen comedy.
Well, what's weird is after they watch this commercial for Project Crossbow, is one of the guys, is it the head of Lambda, Lambda, Lambda that like walks out? It looked like that actor from Revenge of the Nerds.
I swear I thought it was Bernie. And until this recording, I finally looked it up. I'm like, that's not Bernie. It is not Bernie.
It's not him. Wow, it looks so much like him. But yeah, they're like, we're going to have to liquidate him. I'm like, oh, that's going to be something that's going on. Like, they're taking out people that aren't toeing the line. But no, it's a weird little opening that, yeah, a lot of characters, and I think only one or two are going to come back.
And that character is leaving to go tell the president. So in case you thought this movie was indicting Ronald Reagan, he seems to be out of the loop. These are all Oliver North, right here. They're all plotting, and they're like, the president need to know basis. Don't worry about it. The bad guys are these nameless George C. Scott kind of people, Strangelovian, in the way they're sitting around this table plotting death from above. Lasers in satellite.
It's Reagan's Star Wars.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, Star Wars was the inspiration for this plot. But there's a little joke that you guys may just totally miss. But while these guys are talking, and I never noticed this till I saw it in high def, they all have TVs in front of them, and it shows the crossbow shooting things. It's cartoons. So you see like a cartoon house and it's shooting somebody. I shit you not, I think the laser shoots Trump. There's some guy on a golf course with a red cap on and a white shirt and shorts.
What, they saw into 2020 and they're like, this is what Donald Trump's going to be wearing?
Yeah, I don't think he was wearing it back then.
I had to rewind though. It really looked like the crossbow was killing Trump. I was like, what?
But yeah, it's kind of edgy. You're right. This is, I thought, a teen comedy. I wasn't prepared for any of these moves, and I'm finding myself quite delighted.
And yet there's still subtle humor here. I love the video that's like, there's no defense, like a good offense. Working in secret, our scientists, working in secret, you're making a fucking commercial.
Yeah, a commercial. I do love that they call it the peacetime weapon. Again, it feels very Dr. Strangelove to, yeah, this laser that we're going to use to assassinate South American presidents and install our puppet regimes. This is our peacetime weapon.
But there's a problem, Don. We need the laser to have a better energy source. Like, I don't quite know all the science. I'm not a real genius.
It needs 5 megawatts. That's all I know.
Yeah, there's a power issue. And so we do need some nerds. We need to have this figured out by May. That's all I need to know to jump to this science fair and this 15-year-old, one of three troubled geniuses. I think this movie, they say real genius, but it's real geniuses. There are three that are equally important, that have all at one point or another been the star of Pacific Tech.
See, I thought the genius was like their mental knowledge, like they all had genius. I never thought real genius was a specific genius.
Well, there's someone keeping tabs. There's definitely a woman that's like, I want to be with the biggest brain in all of America. And, you know, she's definitely measuring cranium size like some would measure other regions.
And this opening, the first person we're introduced to, William Atherton. Die Hard wasn't out yet, but if you'd seen Ghostbusters, you kind of knew what you were in for.
He, again, one of my favorite assholes from the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, I like him. I mean, I guess I even remember him from Ghostbusters. I mostly remember him from Die Hard. He was the reporter that gets punched in the face.
Apparently, after Die Hard and Die Hard 2, he didn't want to play jerks anymore because people would come up to him and just punch him on the street and think he was the character he played.
He is so condescending in this. I love how swarmy he is, just like putting everyone down.
The way he delivers the lines, what is Einstein really like? Dead.
Yeah. You know what? He's a TV celebrity. And at the beginning, I believe he's legit. Like, Mr. Wizard was a thing on TV. I thought, like, oh, okay. So, yes, sometimes you do have to deal with the public, and sometimes they don't understand your genius. So, my sympathy is with him a little bit as he's navigating this high school science fair, and they have displays like the effect of alcohol on lab rats. Guess what? They're passed out. Not a surprise. I want to just say my science project. I got a firm and tape different colored cellophane on each of the leaves to prove that the different colored lights had no effect.
did that work? Did they not have an effect?
No, of course that's not how chlorophyll works and distributes through leaves. But I proved it. See, I proved
it. Wait. You proved a negative? You can't prove a negative.
Look, that's my genius, okay?
Yeah, my genius was, I got second place in this science fair, was what is the best kind of water to water your plants with? And I had rainwater, I had distilled water, tap water. And funny enough, it wasn't rainwater. That was my hypothesis, but tap water did the best.
And here, based upon this movie, for my science fair.
You did lasers?
I built a Van de Graaff generator that could shoot very low wattage lightning to test the effectiveness of various types of lightning rods.
Stuart and I are sticking with plants. You got lasers and lightning rods.
And I got last place. There are photos of me crying.
I remember.
Last place!
You were robbed. I do remember that. Anyway, yes, this is all fun. Again, my point is, again, I'm brought back to my youth. I'm thinking about Dr. Strangelove. You're absolutely right, Arnie. This is a good vibe.
I like the introduction of our main character, Mitch, and his parents, who are like Cousin Eddie from the Vacation movies, asking if Mitch is getting a signing bonus for going to college.
A little broad, but yeah, I mean, again, the point is we don't want him to have any attachments to high school. Like the fact that everyone here is an idiot, including his parents. Yeah, good riddance.
There's a great joke later on where Jordan says, are you going to introduce me to your parents? No. Are you embarrassed of me? No, them.
Yeah.
I could relate to that line. You know, despite loving this movie so much, I've never really looked into the making of. It shocked the hell out of me to find out Gabe Jarrett, playing Mitch here, is really 15 years old. They had, like, all the child laws about him. He could only be on set, like, 8 hours a day. It's the same if you're 8 years old or 15 years old, I guess. This is a juvenile on set with a bunch of 20-somethings.
He does feel younger. I mean, they definitely get that right, but I would have guessed he could have been 18.
He's 15, and the actress playing his girlfriend is 22.
But Mitch, the character he's playing, he's got a real genius that he's looking forward to meeting. Pacific Tech has already recruited Chris Knight, Val Kilmer, supposedly the biggest brain in all of America. And then, of course, when we see him, Dealey Boppers and I Love Toxic Waste.
On a job interview, no less.
Do you think Matt Damon and Ben Affleck took the scene and repurposed it for Good Will Hunting? There's that interview scene with that he bombs on, and it feels a lot like this.
But here is Chris trying to bomb it, because one of the motivating factors of this movie is he does want that job, but he can't suppress being a rascal. He says he doesn't want them to think he's all brains, no penis. And I think that's just his character. But I think he actually does want that job.
Yeah, it is a happy surprise that he has more dimension than this. I actually cringed a little when I saw this. I'm like, is this going to be a whole movie of where I'm cooler than everyone else on screen?
It mostly is.
Kind of, but at the same time, I do believe Arnie is on to something. He does actually want these things. He is expecting this job. He's hurt when it gets taken away from him in the middle of the movie. But he's on a mission to prove that life is about more than just homework and figuring out math problems.
I'll give the movie this for this Chris Knight character. Look, maybe they did this in My Science Project too. Didn't see that one, but I think of Revenge of the Nerds, think of Weird Science. Like, those are nerds. And like, this seems like something different to have this cool nerd. Like, he's going to hit on the women, but he's not going to take anything seriously, but he's super smart. Like, that was a different image of the nerd than I think we were getting at the time.
Let me just put this out there as one of the main things I love about this movie is that these are not stereotypes. At no point do we have stereotypical nerd characters here. I have done so much reading on what it was like at Caltech during the early days of computers. I've met some of the very first programmers, and then I've gone to grad school to learn computer science, and this is like the classes I attended. You had a lot of very smart people, and some looked like Lewis from Revenge of the Nerds, sure, but by no means was it an entire class of people with pocket protectors, and the fact that they actually made three-dimensional characters out of these geniuses is something that always appealed to me more than Revenge of the Nerds.
There is one thing being withheld, and actually we never get to see it, and I kind of wish we at least had one flashback, but we will find out through dialogue that Chris Knight was buttoned down. He was a stereotypical nerd. He was a mama's boy up until very recently. This rebellion we're seeing is a new thing. And he's trying it out. Part of why he's doing it all the time is that he's letting people know he's different and can't be pushed around and isn't going to snap like the third genius, because there's this other guy that it'll take most of the movie to realize was the star at Pacific Tech before either of them. And now he's living in the basement and using their dorm room closet to get down there.
Yeah, he was there 10 years earlier, so in the 70s, and he was the youngest one there. There's a dropped line at the science fair where...
He's the 12-year-old?
He's the 12-year-old, the youngest ever admitted and the smartest ever admitted, and he snapped.
Yeah, I do feel like this movie at times, like where I wish a little bit more attention was drawn to it. They'll just say a line and move on. I didn't catch that this is the 12-year-old, but Hollyfield, this guy that lives in the closet, like... I think he was the one, because he's going to be the one later on to go, hey, they're going to use this as a weapon. Like, that is why he cracked, I think they imply.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a line that they throw out. So if you're laughing, or it's a comedy, so you're not always paying full attention, you might miss it.
And other than Val Kilmer, the actor playing Laszlo is the one who's probably worked the most.
Uncle Rico.
Yes, Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite. The werewolf from Fright Night 2 is where I know him from, but this guy has been in like several of the Taken movies, and...
I mean, character actor. Let's not oversell him. He's in the background of many movies you may know.
Uncle Rico ain't in the background of that film.
I don't remember it that well, but yes, I do remember him.
But he, yeah, as you say, he is just a tease here. You see some strange wraith-like presence walk into Mitch's dorm room, walk into the closet, and seemingly disappear. We're going to spend a lot more time with the current students. And Chris is a very brief introduction, who Mitch really gets thrust into the midst of is Kent and his lackeys. And Kent is, he knows he's not the smartest there, but yet he's going to try to undermine people so that he still is the best.
Did they want him to look like Jaws from James Bond with those braces?
I can't believe that that was what they were going for.
He's got a freaky look. Those braces give him just a weird look.
Yeah, he's a nerd, but he's tall and he's kind of imposing.
You should see this guy now. I couldn't believe how he looked these days. I mean, he looks like he could kick your ass, but the braces always struck me as odd too. I think they might be fake braces, and that might be why, like, we're just catching that those aren't actual braces and they make his mouth move a little funny.
Yeah, you gotta have an enemy here. And again, this feels like, honestly, what I'm watching could just work as a TV show, right? It has all the elements of a good sitcom where your main character is buttoned down to earth, a kid, a Doogie Howser, if you were, maybe in over his head because he's got to swim with older kids and they're come with reputations, and again, he's barely hit puberty. I feel like this could have run on television. I feel like you could just make a show about these characters and it would be a lot of fun. And this would be the antagonistic suck-up that is always doing whatever for Hathaway so that he can remain in charge. And he will be the one to tell Mitch, when Hathaway's not around, I own you.
I guess you're afraid of William Atherton. You're calling him Hathaway. I always refer to him as Jerry. I guess I'm just on that kind of basis with him.
Okay, fair enough.
You don't get to use his first name, Jacob.
Yeah, and he's kind of funny because, you know, he's told by the one CIA person that we see in another scene, Don, comes to visit him. They're always, he's trying to slip in, you know, through the sides. It's not something they want to publicize, but he's like the one saying, you know, you got to get this thing going. We need it faster. We need to fix this laser power source. And if this project gets cut off, it's not just bad news for us. You're going to get audited. And, you know, he drops him off at this remodeled house. It's just, you know, of course, like, this guy has spent money he didn't have, government funds, our taxpayer dollars are there in his two-floor, newly remodeled house.
Of course, because I'm sure he's, I mean, you don't give to the CIA, you charge to the CIA, but you're not paying these students for their work. So, yeah, and yeah, just the ego on this guy. I mean, you said Mr. Wizard, but when we see his show, it reminds me of Nova, that PBS show. If you remember that.
I mean, still on. Yeah, I mean, I watch PBS, so yeah.
I think that's given a lot of credit. I was thinking, whatever that show that Robin Williams got fired from on Mrs. Doubtfire before he had to put on go and drag, like, that's the quality of the show.
Yeah, it's really, like, local access. Like, and I think there were even to think that he's not that good because when Kent comes to grab him from that, he stands in front of the teleprompter, and the guy doesn't know anything if he's not reading the teleprompter. So I think we're supposed to think this guy is a fraud in all areas of his life.
But he's so wonderfully smarmy. One of my favorite lines from this is when he's dropped off at his house, and just the line, he sees one of the workers there. He's like, you're a laborer. You're supposed to be laboring. That's the price you pay for not having an education.
Yeah, my favorite line of this film.
Yeah, they may push it, I don't know if it's too far, but they push it very broad. I mean, again, screenwriters of Police Academy, this feels like the G.W. Bailey character. This is the sergeant that you want all the new recruits to humiliate. And I don't think I knew the first time I saw it, but certainly watching it again, when we see him jogging home and he's screaming at the dogs and the kids in his yard, and there's Val Kilmer with a bag of popcorn.
Chekhov's bag of popcorn.
Yeah, they've set this up nicely. All of these things he hates.
I don't know if I'd say nicely. It's like, why does he have a bag of popcorn? That seems weird, but I get it. At least they're setting it up.
Yeah, and it's stuff that it took me several watchings to really get all of that. You know, like, when he's eating popcorn at the beginning and Jerry says, I hate popcorn. When the end came with the popcorn, I didn't remember that line the very first time I saw it. Then on rewatchings, I catch that where it was set up. And what's making me smile, though, are the lines like the one we mentioned about your laborers. There's just banter in this that is really fast paced. And I was watching this movie 6-7 times and still picking up on little lines.
Yeah, it's got a screwball comedy vibe. If you know to me, it was a golden age of comedy in the 30s. We had just invented talking films. And so we got all these playwrights and they were witty. And so all these people, novelists, frankly, too good for the movies, came and wrote all of this good stuff. And we had 30s and 40s. We just had that kind of fast pace, keep it going. Like, if you don't hear one joke, don't worry, another one's coming right at you.
Yeah, and I feel like that's how the scenes are, too. It's kind of ADD, and this is what we always say with comedy. One joke might not work for you, another one will. Just throw it all against the wall, see what sticks. Like, this whole ice skating scene, it's probably, 4 minutes long. It just kind of drags for me. But this is where we get introduced to the female lead, Jordan.
Yeah, we've mentioned this as a type. I think this is a prototype. This may be the blueprint for the manic pixie girl, the idea.
She's definitely manic.
She's so awkward that you have to fall in love with her. And that, you know, that she comes over to offer to make Mitch a bed. Not make his bed, but to actually build him a bed in case he didn't have one. I mean, it's just, she's way over the top. She's really doing it big.
It's not that over the top. My sister actually built a bed when she was 8 months pregnant, because she just has that kind of energy.
Yeah, but it's fun. It works because everyone is working at this speed.
And I love Jordan in this movie because she is a female character in one of these movies that is not just a sex pot. I mean, I think she's very attractive. I think I had a major crush on Jordan, not the actress, on Jordan when I watched this movie as a kid. Not even knowing it was the same actress who was the Omega Mu in Revenge of the Nerds dating Anthony Edwards. But she is part of the gang. She's never objectified. If you think about Revenge of the Nerds, you know, I like that movie for what it is.
But there's a lot of sexual assault in it.
Oh my God, a ton. And that's the point of women.
It was shocking when I rewatched it when I was in college. I'm like, I don't remember all the sexual assault going on in Revenge of the Nerds. But to your point, Arnie, this is another reason. This is reason number two. My best friend loves this film is because of this female character. It's not Revenge of the Nerds. It's not Weird Science. It's someone here that's going to contribute to the intellect of the film. She's there for the brains, not the looks.
Yeah, she has agency. She's not part of the laser crew. She and the other character who's really minor, named Ick, who made the dry ice that they were skating on, neither of them are in the laser crew, so they're very minor characters compared to everybody who is working on the laser, but yet they still have their own things going on and still aren't stereotypical minor background characters, and I really like how they round out the crew.
Yeah, agreed. Again, TV cast, I feel like this is a better cast than, what's that nerd show people like?
Big Bang Theory? I can't stand it.
Ugh.
Yeah, there we go.
Why did you even bring it up?
Well, because it's like this, because I can see...
It's not. I've watched... It's awful. This is funny. I genuinely laughed in this film.
Let me bring up the difference there, though. Kelly Curacao, or however you pronounce her last name, in that, is an objectified sex pot. Whereas here we have Jordan.
Yeah, until they brought Blossom into that series, it was all about the dumb blonde that lived next door.
Right. And they do have one of those in here where Val Kilmer interviewed that woman that I mentioned is measuring craniums. You know, she can't be a scientist herself. She wears glasses. She's blonde. And she is trying to land a husband. It's mentioned that she's already been
Is that the woman that's going to show up and try to get with Mitch later?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I was so confused. But even then, she's looking for the smartest guy.
She'll find him. Yes, she will get there at the end.
I don't think she's looking for a husband. She's a smart guy groupie. Now, when she finds number one, then she can't get any better than that. But, you know, she doesn't show up at Mitch's to marry him. She's just wanting to check them off like a groupie.
And I think, you know, they don't want to make Chris Knight any more unlikable already. He's kind of an assault. I struggle with this character. I'm just going to put it out there.
He's a lot.
He's a lot to handle. And I think when you're young, you see someone like this and Ferris Bueller, you think, wow, they've got all the answers. They're so cool. I want to be like them. And then you go off to college and you meet people like this and they don't clean up after themselves and they're terrible roommates and they're not emotionally available and are just kind of terrible people. The bloom is off, is what I'm saying. You can like the bad boy at first, but I do think as an adult, it's hard for me to like a Chris Knight character. He is actually pitted against Mitch. He is going to find out that Mitch is smarter than him, that his entry test exams are 20 points higher. And so the whole status for Knight and him being the golden boy is starting to go away now that this 15-year-old is here and his roommate.
I think we're going to go back to our Top Gun review here because I disagree about the bloom being off the rose. I love Chris Knight in this movie. I can't get enough of him. And I would like to be him in real life.
But you've met these people in real life. Like, super, it's kind of why I fight with Deadpool too. Again, all these people that don't give a shit and you think that's so funny. Yeah, they don't give a shit about you. They don't give a shit about anyone. They're actually kind of terrible people. So it's hard for me not to see that when I look at this character that's meant to be funny.
Maybe it'd be different if Mitch was older, if he was a senior too. The fact that he's 15, that he's, you know, he's wearing these dorky suits to class. I feel bad for him. This is supposed to be his mentor and he's taking him to the tanning invitationals instead of focusing on lasers. And Jerry's going to get super pissed at him. Like, you need a better mentor. I feel bad for Mitch because of all of Chris's antics.
And I think Chris pays the price for that. Chris does own up to it at points and he does. He is trying to be there for Mitch, but he's also trying to prevent Mitch from going the way of Laszlo.
And I'm glad they wrote it that way, because again, jealousy is a factor of there. You might think, and I thought for a while, oh, he's just trying to ruin this kid. Like, he's not wanting to have fun. He's not getting him laid.
He's trying to. He threw a tanning invitational for him.
Again, the way that I'm reading it in the beginning is, yeah, I'm using you as the excuse that I can run off with the beautician and say, stop eating that hamburger. It's making your breasts too large. I mean, like, again, I don't see him doing things for other people. I see him performing for other people.
See, and I see him as altruistic. You say jealousy with Mitch? I took it as he didn't give a damn who had the higher test scores. He's not Kent. Kent cares about who has the higher test scores. Kent's the one who brings up, you're not the biggest stud around here. He beat your score by 20 points. Chris doesn't care. That's not what Chris is about. And the tanning invitational, he doesn't throw a orgy for himself. He takes all the students there, including Dean Devlin. Yes, Independence Day's Dean Devlin is one of the nerds at the tanning invitational.
Never will believe he's a genius. Sorry, not buying that.
But he says to all of them, this may be your only chance to have sex. He's trying to open it up for all of them, including Mitch, knowing that many of these guys are a little too tightly wound.
Ultimately, I am landing where you're saying, but what I'm saying, watching this movie for the first time in 30 some years, my feeling is this is a very conceited, self-absorbed person who doesn't care about anyone but himself. And so it is refreshing to find out in the middle of this movie that in a lot of ways, he's just rebelling. He's rebelling against a culture that makes you a nerd and makes you button down and makes you put your nose into the book and never look up.
Yeah, soon we're going to see that Chris is on Mitch's side. Kent's going to pull a prank where, you know, Mitch is feeling homesick after getting yelled at by Jerry because he went to the tanning invitational instead of playing with lasers. And Kent records him crying to his mom and plays it in front of everyone in the cafeteria. And this is where Chris comes around. Like, first of all, he kind of gives him that talk. Look, I was a nerd too. I don't want you to be a nerd, but let's get revenge.
The other thing is, though, watching it this time, with bullying being what it is, you know, when I saw this as a kid, I just played this up as all the kinds of pranks you see, like Revenge of the Nerds, hot sauce in the jock straps, right? It's just a cruel prank.
Or pretending to be the main jock in a disguise so you could sleep with his girlfriend
yeah.
without consent.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, just a prank.
But in the hundreds of times I've watched this since, I've not really emotionally took the journey of the film. This time watching it, I'm like, he's going to kill himself or kill others. Like, this is a level of bullying that can become really dark really fast. The fact that he only wants to drop out of school, I mean, the fact that he's calling his parents crying because he got bawled out by Hathaway at the pool party, and then that gets played for everybody at the cafeteria, and they're all pointing and laughing, and some of it's funny. I mean, like, some of it's like, you rented it to the plumber? Well, why can't I bunk with him?
Yeah, can't I move in with him?
I would be laughing too, but the result of that could be Mitch killing himself or Mitch killing somebody else.
There's nothing in this movie that indicates what we're supposed to see is Laszlo. Laszlo is what he could end up being. He could snap and be antisocial. He could disappear into his head. And killing, I don't know if I buy that, but it feels less Ferris Bueller. It feels a little bit more Robin Williams Dead Poet Society, that Val Kilmer is going to be the one to show him a little humanity here. And yeah, he's going to give this, his idea of pranking actually does feel like an empowerment message for Mitch as well.
Although I feel like the revenge isn't a proportional response because, I mean, Mitch got embarrassed in front of the entire school, a very private moment put out there for everyone. This, they don't get a good video of Kent naked with his bowl of Jell-O. They disassemble his car and reassemble it in his room. Now, that's a problem, but it's not a massive embarrassment.
Yeah, it's not embarrassing. And that is the thing with this film. Like, when they go for that broad comedy, like this tanning invitational or ice skating or this, give it another rewrite, I feel like it's not quite there.
It's good enough. You can complain about they don't get justice. That's what I would say. They don't get justice for Mitch.
And it just doesn't feel like there's an iconic scene. Like you think of Revenge of the Nerds or Weird Science. Like there are scenes that stand out. This one, there's a lot of jokes. Very funny movie. I'm not criticizing in that way. It just feels like, again, let's throw everything at the wall and maybe it will stick. Maybe not. Maybe it's fun to just watch it slide down the wall.
I'm going to just throw out there for one thing. I saw Revenge of the Nerds once. I didn't like it. I don't remember it. The nerds scared me. Like, there's something about the way they laughed. Like, I found them creepy.
That's Lewis you're thinking of.
I don't remember any pranks that they pulled. I don't remember a thing about this movie.
The panty raid.
Nothing.
The naked women on the bottom of the pie tins.
I remember a waterbed room and Darth Vader mask. That's it.
Yeah, that's one of the assaults.
Okay. But my point is, I feel like I don't know what to compare it to with other movies of its time and whether it's more vulgar or less. It feels pretty tame. It feels like a PG movie. Is this PG? PG-13?
PG-13. And yeah, I think that's something that I kind of like about it is it's not trying to be vulgar.
Yes.
Revenge of the Nerds was Porky's with glasses.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, yeah, there are definitely a lot of college comedies that kind of repulsed me because too much innuendo and not enough wit. And this one does feel a little, I don't know if smarter is the right word, but more charming.
I think it's smarter in many regards. I think the dialogue is very smart. The patter that comes, this movie is endlessly quotable, and it is through sheer restraint that I'm not just doing a one-man performance of this movie because I can't decide what my favorite line is. They just all are.
That is one thing I will credit with this film. There's a lot of great one-liners. And again, you might have to watch it 3 or 4 times to catch them all. But I noticed my wife, like, just giggling throughout the movie. Like, there'd be some line and she'd just start giggling. You know, this is a Val Kilmer film. She wasn't excited to watch it, but she ended up having a good time because there are those. Again, the big set pieces aren't great, funny, comedic pieces to me, but a lot of the lines are great.
I quote this movie all the time. You still run only when chased. It goes from God to Jerry to you to the cleaners. I'd say that every time I go to the cleaners. I mean, it's just in the vernacular Marjorie and I have. But the other thing I really like about this movie is it never gets complacent. You know, it doesn't follow necessarily the strict 3-act structure because by the time Mitch is getting made fun of, you're halfway into the movie, and the movie's going to have very distinct plot lines where after Mitch is finally accepted, which is half the film, is Mitch coming to terms with being at college and getting his revenge on Kent, The story no longer is Mitch's anymore. Mitch has had his arc. Now it's time for Chris to have his arc, and Hathaway is putting an ultimatum down. Laser by May or you don't graduate. Something that had never crossed Knight's mind before.
Yeah, but I'm still going to say this is Mitch's movie. When Chris does get serious, he's going to look to Mitch for help. Like, it's still Mitch in charge.
It's a buddy comedy, but don't you feel like this mythical character crashes to Earth when the risk of not graduating and not getting that job is put in front of him? He was able to be so carefree because he literally didn't care. He had, you know, the song by Timbuk3 could be about Chris Knight. You know, he's got a job waiting for him, graduation, future so bright, he's got to wear shades. Well, now all of a sudden that future's in jeopardy and he has to knuckle down and actually start working on the laser. And he needs Mitch now. Mitch needed him for the first half of the movie. Now he needs Mitch in order to still fulfill the dreams he was taking for granted. I think that humanizes him.
Yeah, it gives the movie a new focus. Yeah, Atherton. I guess I didn't realize he was always the asshole. I thought this might be a little bit of reverse psychology. But he means it. He's really going to give Kent the job at Darlington, and he really is going to flunk this guy.
The first time, he's just saying, I won't let you graduate. And then we get a good montage to a song I like. They never put out a soundtrack for this, but I've assembled the songs. But you've got this I'm Falling song, which is really kind of fun and new wavy as they're doing this laser stuff. And it's not until after that they still only get like a 2-megawatt laser. You know, we've had these scenes with Don, the sniveling guy, getting on Jerry's back. But then the main guy from the CIA shows up with his daughter at Jerry's house. And that's when the heat's really on Jerry. Jerry feels that the axe is coming down on his neck and he's just not gonna screw around with Knight anymore.
Well, speaking of screwing around, is that daughter who Jerry's sleeping with later on?
Yes, it is. And that is the actress who was the Valley Girl. She was the lead in Valley Girl.
All right. Yeah, again, this film, there's a lot of things. I get it. You got to watch it 4 or 5 times to get it all. Like, sometimes it's just a visual gag or just a reference thrown in the background. And I don't know if it really matters who he's sleeping with, but I was trying to piece this all together for the show.
I was the same way the first time I watched this. I could not figure out who the lady in Mitch's room was. I thought it might be this daughter. The way you know it's the daughter that Jerry is sleeping with is because she's the one who can give as good as she gets from Chris Knight. He's like, if there's anything I can do for you, or more to the point, to you, well, can you hammer a 6-inch spike through a board with your penis? And then when he goes and gets Jerry later, he says to the girl, well, guess you'll hammer later. But this is where we really start to get Laszlo coming in, because we get Knight actually studying and Laszlo comes up from the basement. He's like, oh, well, I thought it would help you guys if you had all of Hathaway's previous tests. I memorized them.
Yeah, he's also got these punch cards. He's doing some kind of sweepstakes scam. I don't know how you use punch cards, I guess, to automate all the forms. But yeah, he's memorized everyone. They're like, where's all these questions? They're in my head. Has Jerry not changed his question since the 70s?
No, he memorized every test Jerry's ever given.
Okay.
And those cards, I don't think they're punch cards. What they are postcards that he has a printer just spitting out.
Oh, is that what it was?
He talks about how he's entered the contest over 1 million times. And I'm like, how much is he paying in postage to get a Winnebago?
And he's only going to win 30% of the prizes with all those.
And this is based off of a true thing that happened. McDonald's apparently had a contest that was enter as often as you want. And somebody did win like 30% of the prizes. And so then it became limited to, you know, one entry per customer. But yeah, Laszlo, he's decided he has material needs that living in the steam pipes aren't going to fulfill. So
I was always hoping we're going to see Laszlo in his pajamas, because that's what turned Chris from a nerd to a cool guy, is he saw Laszlo in his pajamas in his underground lair, and it freaked him out, apparently.
We kind of do, don't we? Isn't that when Mitch goes into the steam tunnels? He never talks to Laszlo, but he follows that down there.
I didn't think he was in his pajamas.
And he just has, like, a screensaver on his computer, Laszlo.
But that was, like, high-tech in 1985, was that? Because I'm like, oh, they just have a screensaver? I'm like, but that was probably really hard to get back then.
But this is Laszlo emerging from the basement, And by watching these guys, he's choosing to become more social himself.
And this is also around the time where we have, again, now I get who this chick is that tries to sleep with Mitch, but he's going to run off to Jordan, and I don't know, it feels a little forced, like he's going to declare his love for her because this other woman tried to hit on him.
I thought it was sweet. Now, listening to the commentary, apparently they really had to have conversations with both of these actors to be like, okay, you're 23 and Mitch is 15. Are you guys okay having a kissing scene? Because that's a big age difference.
And Mitch was all for it, right? Or I guess the actor.
I'm guessing. We may literally be seeing his first kiss on camera. I don't know. He doesn't talk about the film all that much. But I like that he could have made it, as the term they use, with that groupie. And he decides he'd rather be faithful to Jordan. I mean, I thought that was a nice thing. They'd been flirting. She'd been sewing him sweaters. I love that when he comes in to talk to her, she's just sanding the floor. I mean, there was not a term for ADHD back then, but she is it to a T, right?
Oh, yeah. No, again, my sister does this kind of stuff. Like, she has a drum kit, so if she just has a bunch of energy, she could just go and start playing the drums.
They're doing their best to squeeze Mitch's storylines in here, but you can feel them getting tamped down. Like, it's kind of about the laser now, and like whenever they can get into Jordan and Mitch, it's usually sort of a throwaway line or a little bit. They don't get a full-blown romantic scene, really.
Yeah, they get this one kiss, that is it. Then they just like are together and they smile at each other a lot, and they're a cute couple. But Revenge of the Nerds, this isn't, where it follows up by seeing her take her top off and he gets in her pants.
And the more you talk about these nerds, the more I don't want to see this movie. Like, again, I like the sweetness of this. I think it's really important to make this charming and feel like a screwball comedy and not a sex comedy.
It is at this point when I guess we get into the third act, when it all becomes about the laser. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen that 80s, I guess, classic Stripes.
Yes.
With, you know, Bill Murray. All people remember the first half of that film when it's like super funny. They don't remember, like, you never hear any references to the second half where they go on some weird mission to like Russia or something. And it's all these weird antics. And I feel like that is where this film, I didn't remember any of this stuff, like lasers getting sabotaged and then sneaking onto bases. This I did not remember at all from the one time I had seen it.
Yeah, that's why I said this movie didn't feel paced regularly, because most movies, I think, would end with the laser's creation and the teens celebrating, right? I mean, that's what this entire movie has been about, is these kids on campus.
No, it's very much told you in the first scene, like, it's about this laser stuff. And it's been dribbled in there that Laszlo cracked because they took the things that he thought were cool and they, what was it? I can't even remember the story.
It's like a single line. I don't blame you.
All they say is that what he developed was killing people. I don't know if it was poisoning them or if it was weaponized, but what he did killed people.
Yeah, no, that's important to have to come back to for the climax. You have to make this real. It's not enough just to be a genius and invent the laser. You got to deal with the fallout and the ramifications of that.
Yeah, I think we see Kent's final act here before he just becomes a punching bag of a joke for the rest of the film. Like, they have figured out through, I don't know, one or two montages, they figured out how to make this laser get to 5 megawatts and not burn up or whatever the science stuff they're saying is.
Total best song of the movie, number one, is A Hard Time in the Making. I sing that all the fucking time.
It's the liquid nitrogen, right? Like, we've seen Val Kilmer shave off a little piece in order to trick the vending machine, right? Like, he makes a fake quarter. Here, the whole, I don't quite get the science of it, but the point is, if you make a part of the laser, it can, I don't know, it can get hot.
Real theoretical science. They actually had real scientists there. This is not Star Trek technobabble.
Well, good for them. I mean, I'm actually really glad that this movie works on that level. I just don't work on that level, so it didn't matter to me.
Yeah, I don't even understand this big epiphany that Chris has. Like, the laser blows up, and he gets mad, and yeah, there's that liquid nitrogen, and he looks at it on the ground. To keep the laser cool? I thought lasers are, like, really hot lights. Like, of course you need to keep them cool. It was weird that that was the big revelation.
And Kent really goes a step too far. If exposing Mitch with that phone call, that's something I could see some asshole roommates of mine doing to people. I mean, I have known some real jerks in high school and college who would do things like that. But to smear dirt on the lens of the laser so that Knight's entire project melts down so he can't graduate. That's a new level of evilness for Kent there, that he would sabotage the entire project so he can steal the job away from Chris.
And that's why it's not enough to put his car in his dorm room. That's why you say that it was unsatisfying, the tactics that they took earlier. I think they appropriately respond to this level of villainy by gassing him, putting microphones in his braces, and making him believe he's become schizophrenic and talking with Jesus.
Yeah, don't touch yourself. I love that part.
And that's what convinces him it is God.
You've been a very naughty boy.
I feel like I could say that to any college student. I'd probably be right.
You know, Arnie, I know you didn't get into all the sexual politics of Strangelove, but this idea of an incel and all of that, that kind of plays into that everything is ultimately about sex. I mean, that was kind of what Kubrick was getting at with talking about nuclear proliferation. And here, yeah, the fact that this guy could never get the girl, his resentfulness, it's why Val Kilmer's cooler than him.
We never even saw Kent interested in a girl, though. I mean, Kent could be gay. Kent could be asexual.
He only cares about Jerry.
He cares about Jerry and the job. That's what he wants. He's all about the money and the progress. So I never even get that he's jealous because Mitch is dating Jordan.
He's not asexual. He's doing something with Jell-O. I mean, my point is that this is the insult you give someone. You can't get with someone. You have to screw Jell-O. Like, this is how we conceive of the angry nerd. Like, this is what we think the Unabomber is, right? Like, someone that can't get laid.
I never thought of the Unabomber naked with a bowl of Jell-O, but thank you for that image.
There it is. You can enjoy that all the rest of your life.
But the movie, even this, is still pretty funny with the trying to play God with Kent. But then they decide they're going to break into an Air Force base and go undercover. And this is, it's back to the beginning of the film, like you said, Stuart, with the opening with the CIA guys. But it feels a far cry away from smart people on ice and the other things they were doing.
Yeah, this feels very loose, like a lot of improv probably going on.
It's a long way to go for a Jiffy Pop joke, I'll give you that. But I really like the Jiffy Pop joke, and it's what I remembered about the movie. Honestly, the only thing I could remember about Real Genius was the popcorn and what they did to Kent with his braces. Like, that was it. That was all that I could remember. So this stuff at the end, it stuck with me. Whether it fits or not with the rest of the lightheartedness, it's the stuff that I took away. And yeah, this is not hysterical when they're breaking into the jet and switching out EPROMs, whatever the hell EPROMs are.
Arnie?
Those are actual names of those chips, yes. EPROMs are, if you open up your computer and look at your motherboard, there's quite a few EPROMs on there.
But it doesn't belabor the point. You know, comedies are short. This is getting to the joke where, you know, a congressman and the other cool professor are all going to be dragged from their bedrooms to go to this house to watch this military laser shoot off course. And yeah, Kent is going to think that it's a religious moment coming streaming through the stained glass, hitting this giant ball of foil in the foyer.
But Jerry is in a wonderful position because this whole time we've seen him lord his power over the students. And now there he is in with these Air Force guys, and they're like, oh, wait, you're not doing an actual mission from space? And he's trying to still play that ego, but he ends up sniveling just like Don did. So we get to see him undercut. And yes, they have put it. The first time I saw this, I did not know what they put in that house. They tell Kent to go to the house, but not to go in. But Kent's like, all right, Jesus, I'm not going to wait around anymore. He goes in. And yes, it turns out it's a huge Jiffy Pop thing.
But not giant-sized popcorn, oddly enough. It's still regular-sized popcorn.
Again, the fun of it, just as a kid and now, the idea of having an avalanche of food that you ride out of your front door.
I love the shot during the closing credits where Jerry finally comes home and like this house is off its foundation, popcorn just spilling out everywhere. Great set design there.
Did they win? I think we do see one brief shot of the laser self-destructing, right?
Yeah, catches on fire.
I mean, because obviously they could just go do another test and move on, but the laser has died.
They did something beyond just changing the coordinates. It was Laszlo who changed the coordinates by hacking the system. When they went in and changed the chips, they basically set this laser to self-destruct after. So they not only shot Jerry's house, but they lost their laser, and these guys obviously aren't going to build them a second one.
And because they have a congressman there and another professor, it means that Val Kilmer is going to pass and the other ones aren't going to be thrown out of school, I guess?
Yeah, Jerry's going to go get arrested or kicked out. I mean, it's all implied.
And what I hear at this point, I'm guessing Jerry has already signed the papers that Knight has graduated. What this is doing is exposing the collusion between Hathaway and the CIA and trying to shed light on secretive, illicit weapons creation.
Yeah, but in the end, like Police Academy, whatever it was, like it ends up being what you get super glue and, you know, like people are just humiliated. The whole point is you just want to humiliate the people in charge. It's a prank mentality. That's what winning looks like here. Like the idea that the dogs and the kids return to the front yard to play in the popcorn. Everything that Atherton hated is now here in his front yard.
The dog. I love the dog.
Yeah. The shame of it is enough. It doesn't matter whether he can sell those blueprints to some other. It's again, it's not really about the laser. In the end, it is about the nerds winning, saving the day. And it's fun. It's fun to watch them do that here.
And everybody wants to rule the world. This one always shocked me. I mean, that was like a number one hit that they were able to get into this movie. And in the commentary, she did talk a little bit that it was tricky because of they picked the song and then it became a hit and then they had to work harder. But even before I knew about music rights, I was just shocked they got that song for this movie.
Yeah, it's perfect. And it accompanies Laszlo leaving the basement. He did win the Frito-Lay sweepstakes. He got an Airbus. He got Sherry. She's got the number one brain in the country. And they're off to Wyoming for a TV show again. I wonder why it didn't get a green light. I guess because this movie wasn't a big enough hit.
They say she has a survivalist ranch. Now you have me thinking that Laszlo's the Unabomber.
Sure.
Well, Jacob Stewart, do you recommend Real Genius? And just so you know, anyone who says no will have to be liberated. Jacob.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this one, I guess this is the underrated nerd movie. Besides Arnie and My Best Friend, I don't see a lot of people referencing this one. Of course, Revenge of the Nerds, it broke that ground, even though, look, everything in the past is problematic, but that movie is super problematic by today's standards, and hopefully future standards, and hopefully standards much closer to when that movie came out. And so maybe that's a little problem, but I get why it's so revered. It was the first of its kind with nerds. And then, like, you have Weird Science. I mean, it's got Kelly LeBrock. Of course, that movie's going to be great. But this is the one I don't hear a lot of people talking about, and as I rewatched it this time, really for the second time ever, it's got some sharp lines. My problem is when they get into the pranks, they're not always the best pranks in that, and I feel it kind of lags, but there's a lot of great little lines if you're willing to sit down two or three times and just listen to this film. It's a funny movie, and like my friend said in his very long essay about why he loves this, a lot of it was what you've been getting at, Stuart, is that buttery popcorn Dr. Strangelove. And, you know, we would have debates where I'd be like, no, obviously Dr. Strangelove is the better film, Kubrick's the better filmmaker, blah, 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 blah. And he'd be like, no, it's Real Genius because this is what the masses will be willing to see. And so that message of anti-militarism and the military-industrial complex, it will get out there because of the buttery version of Dr. Strangelove. And maybe he's right. I don't know. But yes, you should see this film. It's a lot of fun. It's funny. I like the subtext in it. And yeah, Arnie, you can tell me if this is underrated or not. I feel like it's not one a lot of people talk about, and maybe they should. It's a fun little film.
Stuart.
Yeah, totally charming, partly because it is the 80s answer to Dr. Strangelove. Back in the Bay of Pigs era, Kubrick saw the Cold War as a dick measuring contest. Here, I think Strangelove Kid sees it more like a wet t-shirt contest. You want to prove that you have the biggest laser, but in the end, you're going to get blueballed. The warmongers will not win. They're not going to blow up the world in this movie. Everyone just wants the party. It's not genius. I don't think this movie is one of the greatest, Martha Coolidge is not pioneering next level comedy. She is following a formula that has worked time and time again. But I dare say if Revenge of the Nerds is this good, and I'm hearing you guys saying it's not, or Police Academy, like, let's do those franchises, because this was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, in part also because they have a really appealing cast. I'm struggling to think of another movie, actually, where Val Kilmer's irritants are actually fun, contribute to the joy of the movie. Better than Ferris Bueller, better than a lot of the 80s movies, comedies that I can think of that follow this. Broad strokes, but again, I even like the supporting characters that barely make mention here. Ick, Jordan, Kent. Yeah, but this is a pilot to a sitcom I would have watched all through the rest of the 80s, right after Alf, before Growing Pains. Like, it's comfort food. And it is, if you have any love for this era, it is a smart version of that dish. So recommend, grab some popcorn and dig in.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys like this movie. And I quote it a hell of a lot. And yeah, I seem to reference it a lot more than I even realize I do. But to me, this was just a fun movie when I first saw it when I was 11 years old. I liked it because I liked Chris Knight. I was far more Mitch than Chris in sixth grade, and I wanted to be more Chris. And I really liked a lot of the teen movies at the time. Had the students overcoming the teachers. I mean, again, you mentioned Ferris Bueller, Stuart. There were just so many of these kids overrule adults movies, and that really appealed to me as a young child. And the soundtrack, I just loved the 80s pop in this. But then I kept watching it. And as I got older, I started catching a lot more of the jokes that I didn't necessarily get as a kid. You know, I didn't follow all of the lines about Sherry sleeping with all the 10 brains. And I got, you know, some of the jokes around Kent, but there's so many one-liners in this movie that the more I watched it, the more I got out of it. And then as a later teenager and adult, I started to realize that this was actually a really smart anti-war message movie about a time where, to this day, I think we still don't know everything that's going on behind closed doors with government weaponry, biological, technological, what have you.
I mean, Trump told us he does have a super duper missile for Space Force, so.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing.
Now, admittedly, I did wish for the Crossbow Project when we were hunting for Bin Laden. I mean, every time we were hunting those mountains, I'm like, if we just had that Crossbow Project, it would be fine. But
that's the effect that real genius has had. You're like, Arnie, what's your foreign policy? Well, we got to get the Crossbow Project. We got to get this laser up in space.
All roads lead back to real genius. And you know what? I get it, Arnie. It is a fun movie, for sure.
Yeah, it's quotable. It's fun. It's a film that's above average intelligence, featuring people of above average intelligence, and done in a way that anybody can follow along. And as I said before, it avoids the nerd stereotypes. It brings in a smart female character at a time when females were not really in science. They were not in computer science or in these programs. There were some, but to see it represented here where she's not a Baywatch babe. You know, we recently reviewed Candyman 3 with Donna DeErico, and I feel like that's how most 80s movies would cast the lone female around a bunch of nerds.
Or the Big Bang Theory in the 2000s. Yeah. So there you go.
Probably helps having a female director to like smell test some of that and go, nope, we're not doing that.
I agree. And I definitely feel that that's what made Jordan more human, is having the female director behind it. But it's not like it undercut any of the male storylines either. And just great characters, great acting. And this is why, yeah, I kept watching Val Kilmer, because I feel like he had a spark on the screen here with the one-liners and everything. Jacob, you hypothesized a lot of ad-libbing. I think there was some working of scenes at the time, but I don't think any of this was ad-libbed, because I've never seen Val Kilmer on or off screen be this funny again. He's given some great performances, and I'm glad I became a Val Kilmer fan out of this, because I saw movies I never would have seen because they had him in it, like The Doors, like Tombstone, like Thunderhearts, like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I mean, he has been in some really, really good movies that I wouldn't have seen had I not loved him so much in Real Genius. It is a very, very strong recommend. Not that anybody expected anything else from me. It's not like I came back and went, shit, this is the movie?
Wouldn't that be something? We like it.
Oh, that would have been great.
And you disown it. That would have been hysterical. Too bad you couldn't have given us that ending. That would have been really a surprise.
If you haven't seen it, it is definitely underrated. And I do think it is the best nerd comedy out there. Much better than Big Bang. I can't think of a better nerd comedy. But because of Big Bang, you kept saying TV series, Stuart. Did you know that like they were working on a TV series of this just a few years ago?
No. Oh, a few years ago. Okay, yeah. I definitely feel like it has all the makings of like a really solid show. So no, it could happen still.
Well, the last time they talked about it was December of 17, but Big Bang Theory came out. Nerds were hot. I mean, nerds are basically took over the world anyway.
Sure.
But specifically, Big Bang Theory proved that they could work on television. And so starting in 2014, NBC was going to make the series with Happy Madison Productions, Adam Sandler's company.
Okay. That wouldn't be who I'd call, but all right.
Was Kevin James going to be Chris Knight?
I don't think so, but I could see David Spade as Hathaway.
I mean, you want to get new stars, right? You want to get kids, like age-appropriate, fresh phases, the new Val Kilmer.
Well, that's why I said Hathaway. You'd get somebody as a name for the teacher.
Okay, sure.
But yeah, you'd want new people, or at least somewhat new, as the kids. But I don't think it'll happen. I don't want it to happen. I want this movie to remain unblemished. You know, it's kind of like the Ferris Bueller TV series. There were so few episodes of it, I can forget it exists and not let it tarnish my memory of the actual Ferris Bueller's movie.
Wait, Arnie, are you saying like, they tarnished Ferris Bueller, they tarnished Star Wars, tarnished Indiana Jones, they've taken it all away from me. The one pure thing in life is Real Genius.
Of course it is. I get your point. You wouldn't want it spoiled.
I don't disagree that every single thing you mentioned there is tarnished.
Yeah. If you do want to see a TV series that comes close to being a version of Real Genius, I do think Silicon Valley is sometimes kind of like this. If you ever watch that HBO show.
I tried watching that. I watched the pilot and didn't go for it.
Huh. I'm stunned. I'll have to sit on that. Wow.
It was too dry for funny and too funny for drama.
Well, yeah, it's not drama. I'll give you that.
Apparently, though, if you want the TV series of this, the creators of the show Psych really loved this movie, and the lead character of Sean Spencer is kind of supposed to be very Chris Knightish.
I watched that show. Yeah, I could see it has some of the same sensibility, the humor. He's not Val Kilmer, but yeah, I think this movie has a legacy. I do think that even though it made $12 million in 1985, there are a lot of people that saw it, liked it, and will continue to promote it on podcasts that you great patrons have paid to hear. Thank you so much for joining Arnie on his lifelong mission. How will we follow this up, Arnie, now that this one is done? Our 1,001 show, Real Genius, you're done, right? Put a fork in it.
Yeah, that's usually where the books end. 1,001 movies you've got to see before you die. Like, we could stop now, right?
Well, I don't think we've recommended all 1,001 movies.
Definitely not. It'll be a long time.
Years, decades off before that happens, probably.
Yeah, I don't think any book ever says Mangler 3 is the one you gotta see before you die.
God.
Hey, it will set our book apart for sure. Creepshow 3, Mangler 3, all the Children of the Corn. You gotta see them before you die, people.
I actually think that Mangler 3, if you said what was the worst thing that the podcast ever made me see, that might be it.
No, you don't remember Creepshow 3 then.
Well, I do.
But yeah, I know that some of our listeners, after we announced we were doing Real Genius, were like, so what's next? Soul Man? <It's>
like, is that a thing?
2002. Our 2002nd show will be Soul Man.
Mm.
It's not like I actually like Soul Man. I may have brought up C. Thomas Howell a few times too many, but that's not a movie that I hold dear the way Real Genius is. You know, I really, truthfully, I didn't have to watch Real Genius for this review, but I wanted to.
Okay, geniuses, I got a pop quiz for you. What is the color of night? We're going to find out next week.
Black? Dark blue?
His hair was kind of a crazy blonde in this movie.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's Fire Engine Hysterical. Hilarious film that we've had a patron want us to cover next week, our July show.
I hope they think it's hilarious after your statement.
Oh, no. Yeah, I hope they are mocking it. Ooh, if they really liked it, well... Anyway, it will be a good lead-in for Sleepaway Camp. They have a similar twist, and I have seen this movie, and it is something else.
I saw this movie. I was a big Bruce Willis fan. I mean, I owned his music, so I wanted to see all his movies. I remember renting it. I remember Sarah Jessica Parker and A Speedboat, and that is it.
No. No, no, that's a different one.
Oh, shit.
Isn't that Cruise Control, Speed 2?
No, no, no. That was like Striking Distance. Is that?
Oh, okay. Maybe. Who's in Color of Night?
There is. All right. Hold on to your hats. Bruce Willis is a therapist.
Hey, it worked for Sixth Sense. He's got that role nailed.
It's a sex thriller with a big twist. And I think you would remember the twist if you saw the movie, Arnie. You probably are new to this.
No, I'm sure I saw it if it came out in the early 90s and starred Bruce Willis. But man, I remember nothing.
Okay, well, I look forward to seeing you both there next week. And then, yeah, on to Sleepaway Camp.
So, listeners, thank you for joining us. Thank you for letting me just gush about this movie for 90 minutes. I had a lot of fun watching it, and I had a lot of fun talking about it with you two guys, Stuart and Jacob, because a lot of times I mention Real Genius, and I feel like I'm, like, out on my own. And now you guys have lived it, liked it.
We're in the club. Yep.
You're going to be with me on my future references.
Sure. Absolutely. Citizen Gang, just like Real Genius. Maybe not as good.
And patrons, thank you for your support. And from now on,
stop playing with yourself.
Well, I guess this is goodbye. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to know you at all. If there's ever anything I can do for you, or more to the point, to you, you let me know, okay?
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our Podbean crowdfunding campaign, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
How'd you do? How'd I do? I passed, but I failed. Yeah! I'm happy and sad. Thank you.
Without patrons such as yourself, we couldn't keep doing the shows we put out every single Tuesday. So thanks to you all.
If you think that by threatening me you can get me to be your slave, well, that's where you're right. But, and I'm only saying this because I care, there are a lot of decaffeinated brands on the market today that are just as tasty as the real thing.
I'm not kidding, Chris.
Neither am I, Jerry.
If you enjoy Now Playing, please head to iTunes and leave us a 5-star listing. It's the best way to help spread the word about the podcast.
Oh, sure. I tell you, then you tell somebody else, and the next thing you know, we're in the middle of another ice age.
You can follow Now Playing on Facebook and Twitter, where we post announcements of new episodes and where the hosts post movie mini reviews. Links to our social media pages are available on our homepage.
It's coming.
It's coming! Ah! It's not even breathing, Hutch!
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
It's yet another in a long series of diversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
And he used to be the number one stud around here in the... Smarter than you and me put together.
Now Playing is edited by Arnie.
Did he crack?
Yes, Mitch, he cracked severely.
Why?
He loved his work.
Well, what's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that, but that's all he did.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
I think the young people enjoy it when I get down verbally, don't you?
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
It's easy to lie to you, Mitch. You trust people. I'm a cynic.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein.
Jerry, I think you might be getting a little obsessive about all this.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
So it's both immoral And unethical.
Yes.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
You unbelievable bastard.
Count on it.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2020. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
It's getting kind of weird around here, you know?
You think it's getting too weird around here?
Absolutely.
I didn't notice. I like it. Bye.
Bye.
Who was the guy that was always obsessed with building lasers to shoot all of us? He was
Trevor.
Like,
remember when Trevor. He ran to his mother at yes. Walmart like 4 years ago?
Oh, wow. Okay. Yes. I do. I wonder if it was this movie that inspired him, but he was laser obsessed. He had gone to Radio Shack and he was convinced he could build a laser. And I mean, to hear him talk, it was kind of a, like, we're going to come one
but
day.
But he was going to do like a school shooting with
yeah,
lasers?
Yes. It was like he was ahead of his time. Yes.
It was Columbine with ray guns.
Yeah, he was. The ray guns made it feel cooler, I guess. I didn't see the threat.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be insensitive, but that would be cooler.
They never put out a soundtrack for this, but I've assembled the songs.
I know they have one customer if they ever do.
Yeah, I know, right?
Wait, they never, even in the 80s?
Even in the 80s.
I'm checking Discogs right now.
I went looking for vinyl. I went looking for cassette. This does not exist.
Okay, there was a... Okay, someone just cut it themselves. It was a 7-inch single.
Yep.
Huh.
Well, can you hammer a spike through a... Can you hammer a sentient... Can you hammer a sentient...
You know, a congressman and the other cool professor and all going to be dragged from their bedrooms.
The other cool professor, you didn't recognize him?
No, I didn't recognize most of these people, but I'm sure you're going to tell me some great movies that they were in.
He was Culp from Battle for Planet of the Apes.
Who?
That was the worst one.
Yeah.
That one I don't even want to remember. Where they were sitting around in the schoolroom. Like, oh, that was awful.
But remember that awesome battle with like two Jeeps?
I remember waiting for it. Yep. I remember waiting for a battle that never came. It remains the worst Planet of the Apes. And no, I don't remember Milford from that. And he should be happy about that.
I do think his bunny slippers are better costumes than his ape costume.